Good morning, all. Welcome to Broadcast Clinic 2019. Our committee gave me the honor to introduce our next speaker, Tom King. Tom has been a presenter at the clinic before. Most of you probably know him. If I tried to speak to even half of Tom's accomplishments, well, we'd never have time to get to his talk. So join me in welcoming Tom King, CEO of Kintronic Labs.
Understand what's going on here. Okay. Well, good morning. And I want to thank the committee of Broadcasters Clinic for the opportunity to speak with you this morning about the matter of using AM tower space for other applications than AM broadcast. And I will say that Jeff Welton is a really tough act to follow. And I believe that there's a real reason why he was on here first this morning to kind of wake us all up, because he's not just a good speaker, he's a great entertainer. But anyway, let's proceed here. What I'm going to talk about this morning are a number of different applications that we have looked at for the purpose of adding additional revenue services to AM towers. And these have largely come to us through companies that have approached us asking, you know, how can we possibly make this work on our tower, or telecom carriers coming to us. And I think some of the techniques that I'm going to be talking about primarily are related to base insulated towers, and they can be either directional or non-directional. We have to be, we can put services on any AM tower pretty much. And I think one of the main considerations that is often not properly taken into consideration is the peak voltage that's supplied across the base insulator on the AM station, whether it be a kilowatt or 50 kilowatt. And depending on the electrical height of the tower, that voltage can be anywhere from a few kV to 30, 40 kV. And so one has to consider the fact that if you're going to be putting something across that base insulator, it's got to be compatible with that voltage. And then to minimize the impact of the isolation solution, the associated parallel impedance of what we're putting across has to be at least typically a magnitude 10 times higher than that of the magnitude of the tower drive impedance itself. So we want to, the idea being that if we put a high enough impedance in parallel with that existing impedance, it's essentially not noticeable. It's transparent. And when multiple isolation solutions are a possible cost, that can be, the cost will be the deciding factor. You know, if we have several different solutions we can offer, we'll obviously want to go look at the minimal cost solution. And by virtue of the fact that the isolation solution is installed directly across the tower, lightning is also something we have to consider. And so we will typically consider the most robust solution from a lightning survivability standpoint. So there again, looking at the fact that when we put anything across the AM tower, base insulated tower, we want to be sure that the impedance or reactance of what we're putting across the base is at least 10 times higher in magnitude than that of the drive impedance itself. And what we typically, this will be either a capacitive reactance or an inductive reactance. Or it may be a parallel resonance reactance, where we're looking at a equal and opposite reactance in parallel to yield a very high impedance, whatever the case may be. If we're looking at a tower that's quarter wave, we typically can use just a coil, possibly like a 100 microhenry coil, in which case we put that across, like, if you have a directional antenna system with tower sampling loops, current sampling loops on the tower, you typically have a sampling line isolation coil. And those will typically be on the order of 100 microhenries or so, and they'll be sufficiently high in reactants to where they don't affect the drive impedance of the tower. Now, in the case of a tower that's in the 140, 150, 160 degree electrical height regime, there you're looking at some very high impedances, and you typically have to look at a parallel resonant solution in order to minimize the impact on the drive impedance of the tower. Let's see, there we go. So some of the solutions that we're going to look at this morning include RF chokes, typical lighting chokes that you use for your tower lighting on your towers typically. We'll be looking at isolation inductors, slotted isolation inductors, isocouplers, hybrid cable isolation inductors, and CAT 6 or 7 cable isolation inductors. So a lot of these relate to inductive reactants being put across the base of a tower. And the thing that we have to be mindful of here is that if we're going to be putting any type of cables, like CAT 5 cables, we typically want to put them inside a copper tube and then wind that copper tube in order to present a high reactance across the tower, but provide a path for those cables to go onto the tower. So that's kind of the principle of what a lot of these solutions are that we're talking about. Now, from a standpoint of business and bringing revenue to an AM station, one of the things that we have to think about is certainly the build-out of the long-term evolution of 4G, 5G telecom services and broadband services, and some of which are now being expanded into rural areas. There's some major contracts. I know just in our area, there was just an announcement of a $22 million investment in the rural areas of Southwest Virginia to provide broadband telecom service. And in this case, you know, AM towers, if they're in the right place, could be certainly used to provide a platform for that service. 5G will require more cell sites. And I think that's one of the things that we've heard more and more, that between 50 meters, 150, there's going to be a high-density cell network. And they're going to be looking for every type of platform to put these sites on. And higher data capacity is, of course, part of 5G, and then tower-mounted amplifiers fed by fiber optic cable and power cable. I'll be showing you some examples of these. And then you need to know what's available in your local area. You know, as far as your location, unique to the site that you have, zoning restrictions. You know, one of the things, obviously, that you have the advantage of is you have an existing tower. And you don't have to have any kind of land use permit. You don't have to have any zoning permit. You've got a space there that can be readily used to put a service on there quickly. And then certainly you need to check with, use the Freedom of Information Act to find whatever available information there is about what's happening in your area with regard to broadband build out. Okay, some of the economic considerations. Will your AM transmitter site offer an economic advantage for the wireless provider? First of all, you already have existing land use permits. As I was saying, your site is geographically situated to serve as a gap filler, potentially. And then adequate AC power you have, and then you've got typically transmitter space where you can put equipment if need be. I know typically the telecom carriers want to put their equipment in a separate building. But that is not always the case. And then leasing your tower space provides additional monthly revenue streams, and you can share the cost of the facility upgrade if you would like. You know, that's one thing if you want to trade off rent for maintenance or facility upgrades on your site. That's one of the options that you have in a lease agreement. And then maintenance relief for the broadcaster, certainly too, as I was saying, you can offer to have the telecom carrier provide certain maintenance for your site in return for use of the site for their purposes. opportunity to upgrade the facilities, and then use monthly income for facilities maintenance. Okay, benefits to the wireless providers. I think these are something, of course, there's trade-offs on both sides here, but there are certainly quite a few AM sites available. Existing tower sites result in minimal community resistance. You know, that's another thing that you run into is particularly cell tower companies, they're running into a lot of local resistance in putting additional towers up. So this is another reason why AM sites can be desirable. Appropriate zoning and permitting are already in place. Faster time to market with a new wireless service. And what are the challenges to the wireless providers? Again, I think this is something that they oftentimes don't know what they're dealing with in terms of particularly the fact that this is a live RF tower. It's not a grounded tower. And you have to take particular concerns into consideration when you are thinking about putting services on there. And I think this is one of the things that we've run into, I think, in the case of iHeartMedia sites and Vertical Bridge owning towers, and there being not a clear understanding of what they're really dealing with. Towers and radio stations sometimes are under separate ownership. That's one of the things I'm talking about with Vertical Bridge and iHeartMedia. RF exposure concerns are certainly something that have to be taken into consideration by the telecom carriers. A lack of understanding and addressing possible interference issues and the use of proper grounding and shielding practices, much of which we were talking about there with Jeff. You have to be sure that these devices that you're putting across the tower are properly grounded to the antenna ground system. Otherwise, they're going to effectively change your tower impedance. All right, now I'm going to show you some examples of some of these isolation solutions. All right, we're going to begin with this is a unit that included two four-wire lighting chokes. And this is a case where we are taking power for DC power and applying it to remote radio units that are being installed on an AM tower. The data is being routed via fiber cable, but the DC power is being routed through these chokes. And you will see, you'll notice, here at the top, right here, we have the electrical, this is the RF connection here and ground down here to both of these units. And these typically have reactants on the order of 1,000, 2,000 ohms. And of course, when we start putting these in parallel like this, then we're going to have reactances that are halved, or I'll show you examples of more chokes in some cases, like this one here. And in this case, typically we're providing a 48 volt DC service, and we could be looking at currents that require wire sizes down to possibly 6 AWG. So we're talking quite a bit of current on some of these units. Here's a unit that actually has 24 conductors, 12 DC current circuits going up the tower. And you can see in this case, we actually have a capacitor over here that is parallel resonant to the six lighting chokes to anti-resonate the overall reactance to give us a high enough reactance to put across the drive impedance of the tower. But these are some of the types of schemes that are used in order to get the DC current across the base of the tower. This is a different type of isolation inductor, in which case we use unjacketed coax. And in this case, this can serve at multiple purposes. It can serve as a robust static drain choke. It can serve as a tuning component in a network. And it can serve as a means of getting various services onto the tower. And this actually is used, in this case, it was used for a high-power AM directional station to get lighting across the tower, but also to get RF circuits across the tower. And one of the things that you have to consider is the fact that you have a higher insertion loss on using a cable like this as opposed to using, for instance, an isocoupler. Now, this is another way of getting service. This is 11 gigahertz microwave service, and this is something that can be used for 5G, particularly when you're thinking about that for the future. This is elliptical waveguide, and it can be used up to 30 gigahertz range frequencies. And as we're looking at 5G rollout, we're seeing higher and higher frequencies being considered. And this is a way that we can get those across the base insulator of an AM tower. Well, here we go. All right, now there are some cases where we require for telecom services remote to electrical tilt on an antenna. And this utilizes a particular cable that has a braided outer jacket with multi-conductors internally. And in this case, the actual braided outer conductor of the cable serves as the inductor through which the RF current is passing to form the inductor that goes across the base insulator of the tower. And we have connectors that are at the top and bottom here. And of course, in this case, we have the RF feed here. And the cables are run internal to the copper pipe over to the tower and then broken out to a conduit on the tower. And then we have this is grounded to ground strap down here where we have our connectors interfaced. And then we have the cables coming in through this bulkhead connector here. Now this is a slotted isolation inductor. Now this particular type of inductor gives you a lot more versatility in terms of how you might use it. We have some, these were used actually at, I believe, WINS in New York City. We have an application like this where they needed not just circuits for the AC power for the lighting, but they also wanted to have a series of alarm circuits for the lights, and they needed multiple conductors for that purpose. And they also needed a way to get the sample line across the base insulator up to sample loops on the tower. So these particular isolation coils, you notice these copper cans here at the top and bottom, those actually contain barrier strips with bypass mica capacitors on both ends to bypass any RF that might be picked up on those cables. But this has probably about 24 cables going through it as well in order to provide all the services they wanted to put on it. And we can combine this type of isolation inductor with also Cat5 and other cables. You know, it can be used for a multitude of applications. It's very versatile, and it can be used, you know, as a static drain as well, a tuning component. So it's has a lot of versatility and very robust against lightning, certainly. Okay, this is a complex isolation coil involving three turns of unjacketed 7/8 coax and a parallel resonant capacitor here. You can see right here, it's a tuning capacitor that's anti-resonant at the AM frequency. And of course, as I was saying earlier, the voltage rating on that capacitor needs to be sufficient to accommodate the peak RF voltage across that tower. And this uses 21 internal copper conductors as well as the 3/7 coaxes wound on it. So it serves multiple purposes. And now we're going to turn to the subject of isocouplers. This is a device in which we are using for LTE 4G service across an AM tower. In this case, we have a separate isocoupler for each transmit and receive antenna on the tower. And this has a sectorized receive and transmit antennas on the AM tower. And each one of these devices consists of coupled microwave horns. And we supply these in the 1.9 gigahertz and 2.4 gigahertz bands for cellular telephone, but also for wireless internet services. And these are presenting a capacitive reactance across the tower. So we're typically looking at somewhere around 100 picofarads of capacitance in this case, as opposed to inductive reactance. And then, of course, I think one of the methods that's been used for many years is FM isocouplers to co-locate FM service on an AM tower. And these can be provided in a variety of power levels, typically from 1.5 to 30 or higher, depending on the FM application. And these are typically, again, have to be rated for the peak voltage of the AM tower. And they also have to be low enough capacitance to where they're not affecting the impedance of the drive impedance of the tower. And one can put in additional shunt capacitance in parallel with the isocoupler if you have to, in order to get the impedance up high enough, the reactance high enough to be so you don't see it in parallel with the drive impedance of the tower. And these, of course, have been used substantially with FM translators being put on AM towers. And these show some higher power FM isocoils where we needed to put, for instance, combined FM services on a AM tower, you know, where you're looking at total combined power of 30, 40, 50 kilowatts. Then we go to something like this, you know, where we have a three-inch wound coax either here or here, and a parallel resonant capacitor. This one has some fixed capacitors mounted up underneath the top here, but these were both parallel resonant coils and used to put high power FM across an AM tower base. And I think one of the things I would mention there is that, you know, we can utilize these types of techniques for low power TV as well. And that's another area where, as a result of the TV repack, low power TV stations may be looking for auxiliary sites, for instance, right now, while they're, you know, in the process of being moved. And that's one area that AM operators should be aware of, because you can utilize your tower space for low power TV applications as well. And this particular slide shows some FM translator isolation devices on the left. There's a what's called an isocoil here, which is a wound inductive coax internal of this tube, and or an FM isocoupler, which is a 1.5 isocoupler here, 1.5 kilowatt. So those are two applications, isolation devices that are used for FM translators on AM towers that have been used extensively in recent years. And then we have a larger isocoil here, which uses, some use 7/8, some use 1 5/8 coax to use for higher power FM application. Particularly, we use these if we have you know, 3, 4, or 5 FM translators combined onto one antenna on an AM tower. That's a very good way to get the total power across the base insulator. And regarding the LTE system layout, which we typically find used on AM towers, we have mounted on the towers what are called remote radio units, RRUs, that have separate transmit and receive capability that require no coax feed. This is a more recent development. A typical RRU may be fed with two pairs of 48-volt DC, six AWG power conductors, four pairs of fiber optic cable, and one pair of 18 AWG alarm. So there's quite a few conductors going across the base insulator of the tower. And in order to address this need, Andrew and RFS developed what are referred to as hybrid cables. And these are cables that incorporate copper conductors and fiber optic cable inside a corrugated aluminum outer conductor with a vinyl jacket. And these are some that we have, we gave a paper, I think, a few years ago at NAB with Stephen Lockwood from Hatfield and Dawson and Bobby Cox from our office addressing how these cables can be used in an isolation coil environment. This shows a depiction of some of these fiber optic and copper conductor cables that are available and were particularly made to address the needs of the telecom industry. And this shows one of these coils that was made for a particular station. And the unique thing about this is you see how many conductors we have and how many fiber optic cables there are. In order to avoid making connections between all those different conductors, we design the isocoil so that we essentially make the coil in the middle of the total run of the cable so that we have enough pigtails on both ends to go to the transmit receive equipment and to go up to the unit on the tower without any connections. So it's just a continuous cable feed from the end-to-end solution. And again, in this case, we do have a capacitor here to allow you to anti-resonate the coil at the AM frequency. And this shows a particular photo of one of these coils installed at WLYQ at BNT Diplex site. Given the fact that this is a diplex site, we tuned the variable capacitor to peak impedance, peak reactance, halfway between the two AM frequencies. And we were able to achieve high enough effective reactance at both frequencies to where it did not affect the drive impedance of the stations. Now, that's not always the case. And if you do have a situation where the diplex frequencies are further apart, then we can put in trap filters to isolate the resonance circuits of both frequencies or multiple frequencies, whatever it may be. But that is something that can be done and has been done. We've had situations where we've had to do that. This is an application where we have seven Cat 7 cables going up a tower with two spares. And these are embedded inside a copper tube, as you see on the left there, with the junction boxes that we have down here at the bottom and up here at the top. And you can see a breakout of one of those junction boxes there on the right, where we have the nine cables all terminated in connectors here. And those are all grounded at one end, and then they're bonded to the copper conductor at the top end, and then fed through a copper pipe out to the tower. And as you can see, I mean, we could put as many of these in there that are needed to meet the requirement. And this is something that's a more common application today. That concludes my presentation, and I am happy to now address any questions that you might have.
So, for when you're planning for this to build this out at your tower site, how much real estate should you budget in for this, for the actual cabinet and everything for it? For like just actual spot to build, so that because some places don't have a lot of room inside of their gate to build, you know, extra amenities and such like this.
So you're asking about the space required at the base of the tower?
Correct.
Okay. Of course, it depends on the application, but you know, you can, for instance, you can put the one of those hybrid isolation coils. The thing that you have to be mindful of is the fact that the outer conductor is at tower potential. So that's why we typically want to put it close to the base of the tower in order to, for safety purposes. But if, you know, and it, of course, as far as isocouplers, you know, they can mount at the base of the tower, require very little space. But if you're talking about a larger isocoil unit, like these FM units we looked at, for instance, then typically, you know, I would say you need to be looking at, for instance, a 6-foot by 6-foot space, you know, to mount like a large 3-inch isolation inductor, that kind of thing, if that's what you're asking. Okay. Yes, sir.
A comment that everybody should be aware of. For the construction and for any maintenance, this particular tower will have to be cold. The crews that do this work will not climb if there's any RF, even in the area.
Yes, that's a good point, certainly, given the fact that the AM operator needs to recognize the fact that in order to switch over to this service, you've got to be able to take the station off the air. And if there is maintenance required up on the tower, then obviously that has to be coordinated at a time when the station minimizes their impact to the audience. Yes, sir.
Yes. For years, we've all seen, like as you showed, also lighting chokes, where you come down on the cold end of it, you've got some mica bypass caps or something to take out the residual RF so it doesn't get in the power line. How do you do that with a Cat 5 cable? You can't very well put bypass caps or anything on that, or your bandwidth would be quickly down to about 2,400 baud. How do you get rid of that little bit of residual RF before it actually goes out to the devices that it's connecting to?
So you're asking about on the, for instance, the Cat 5 cable. Typically, that's why we keep the cables inside the tube, and they're typically inside shielded conduit or tube from end to end, so that they are protected from the RF. You know, and if we have conductors, you know, like the lighting circuit, alarm circuits, and so forth, we have bypass capacitors at both ends of those to strip any RF potentially off. But that's the main reason why we have to keep everything inside. And typically, for instance, in the feed to the tower, one of the things that we will typically offer, you know, even for tower lighting circuits, is we will provide a copper or brass junction box at the tower feed end with a clamp that goes around the tower leg to serve as the RF feed, but also that provides a shield for the RF, any circuits going through that tube. And then we'll have a barrier strip inside with bypass capacitors there. But everything is shielded inside completely. Good questions. And I have an example of a Cat 5 cable isolation coil in our booth here at the show, so you're welcome to come by there and look at it. Any other questions? Thank you all for your attention. Appreciate it very much.